On this week's episode of A Slice of Golf, we talk about the ultimate sins for a golf spectator and what punishments we would hand out. Ben gets a bit medieval on these ones. Our better ideas for golf playoff formats, our tips for the Open, and much more. This is A Slice of Golf, hosted by me, Tim Williams.
Me, Chris Wright.
And me, Ben Fowlis.
All right, welcome along. It's another episode of A Slice of Golf. It's not coming home, but you know what? You can listen to us and we'll hopefully inject a little bit of good times and enjoyment and humour back into your lives. I'm here, as always, with Chris and Ben. Chaps, hope we're both doing well. Let's not mess about. Let's get straight into it. Who's playing this week? What's been going on? Let's talk about practice. Chris, I'm going to come to you first because I'm intrigued to hear where the latest steps on your road to recovery. Actually, road to recovery is a bit wrong because you kind of jumped right back into playing the other week, having been off for a while. What's the latest?
Zero golf. I was obviously, I was a bit sore the day after the pod, 2 days, whatever. But now just still been doing my exercises, still been doing my rehab, I suppose we'll call it. Feeling good. I'm looking to get in some around this week in the practice session as well. So, but yeah, no golf last week. Don't really know why. Just nothing going on. But yeah, so easy, done.
Not completely acceptable, that answer. But okay, we'll move on. We'll move on from that. No excuse for not playing golf. Interesting manoeuvre. Ben, I know that you have more than a bit of golf coming up, so talk to us through this week you've got panned out.
Right, over this past week we was down at T-Box on Thursday with a couple of the boys, so that was for 2 hours, so we were hitting a lot of golf balls then, and then all of the uni boys got together on Saturday and we had a 4 hour session at Urban Golf. How great a practice that can be. I suppose it's probably closer to a very social round of golf because it meant a few beverages whilst we were playing TPC Sawgrass. Now, where we spoke about it being a potential social location, Chris, then Urban Golf is probably more the sort of location you're looking at. The service was, I mean, there were loads of people there. The service was pretty packed because there was just, you know, clearly not enough staff for the amount of people there. But yeah, it was good fun, good to see everyone. And then that was in the build up to I'm having a week off, just kind of combining the Open this week with obviously the football the other day. It was kind of like, well, I'd potentially be missing some work. I want to watch all of that. So as much as it's not really a holiday, I am back at the parents for the week. And that means I'm around all of my old school friends. A lot of them are self-employed and can get time off as and when they like. So we've got round books in tomorrow, definitely. Round books in Wednesday, definitely. Potentially around on Thursday, potentially around on Saturday, but they are pending on whether I want to or whether I want to watch the Open. So they're kind of flexy. The this is a big side note, but I have to give them a shout out for this. The friend I'm due to play with tomorrow, it was their club championships a couple of weeks ago. I think they played Saturday, Sunday. It was a two-round event, so it's combined score in the 2 days. He took the title, which props to Ozzy. No, that was not the only positive from the weekend. He hit his first ever hole-in-one in the first round. Wow. And then for him to take the club champs title, he actually, it was tied between him and one other. He won it on countback. So had he not hit his hole-in-one, he wouldn't have won the tournament. So that adds even more to the hole in one. And then also, that was his first time dropping into single figures for his handicap. So that's a pretty flipping good weekend for him. So, needless to say, he's on an absolute, well, about as high as a golf high could be at the moment. So, as soon as I put it into the group chat that I was back, did anyone want to play some golf? He was straight in the DMs, did not hesitate, and was like, yep, let's get a round booked in. So, potentially playing twice with him and then another mate. And then different group of friends for Wednesday. So, yeah, big up, Oz. Good work, mate.
Nice, nice. And are you allowed back to Urban Golf after some footage might have materialised over the weekend of somebody losing a grip on a driver and said driver careering off into Urban Golf?
Yeah, so there was chat about this. There was chat about, do we take our own clubs? And then a couple of boys were like, no, that's way too busy. I was like, all right, well, I can't do that. And then all of us forgot to take gloves as well. And we stepped up, and the lad in question hits the ball a really flipping long way, swings the club very hard, and didn't have a glove on. Driver slipped completely out of his hands as he tried to give it full beans, and driver went careering into the screen. Thankfully, no damage was caused to either the screen or the club, so we are allowed back. Nice. Thankfully.
Excellent. Well, I mean, just as a disclaimer, I've been to Urban Golf, and I've been to Urban Golf with Ben before, and I took my own clubs because I'm that much of a keno. I took my own clubs down to Urban Golf with me on a Saturday afternoon. Look, it's a form of practice. You've got to practice with your tools. What am I saying? You know, there you go. Myself, no rounds for me, but more driving range action for me. What I might be doing is I've targeted, if you like, a competitive, and I'm doing air quotes for those of you who can't see, a competitive round return of the 1st of August, which is a Sunday Red event over at Leatherhead Golf Club. So there's two reasons I put that in. One, because I've got a spare weekend and I can play golf. And the second one is I want to have a target to work towards so I can have a really focused practice over the next 2 weeks. Because practice went well, but out of nowhere, my driver has now become very, very erratic. Very, very, very erratic.
Question for Chris. When you say return to competitive golf, when you say return to competitive golf, are you going to play rounds before that? And that's just going to be your first, like, I'm going to actually count this as a quote unquote competitive round, or is that just going to be your first round back?
No, I'm looking for a round the weekend before, if not two. But I think you should always, it's always good when when you're training for anything or you're practicing anything to have like a set target in mind that like, okay, that's the target for when I'm going to work towards and get everything geared up for and structure my practice around that. So I'm hoping to play the weekend before that, one or two rounds. But yeah, that's the plan. Latest update on interesting things I've seen at the range. So last week we talked about how someone was somehow managing to cannon it back into the range whilst hitting a driver. Not quite as extreme as that this week. I've not seen this before, but I feel like this may be more common than I'm going to make it sound. Now, in terms of having two gloves on, I've seen the weather, you know, the FootJoy, the weather gloves that you can wear under cold or wet, whatever. I saw someone at the range a couple of days ago. These were definitely not weather gloves at all. These were just genuine standard gloves, but they were wearing one on each hand, which meant they obviously went and bought one right-hand one and one left-handed one of the same. And I did kind of sneak a look, exactly the same make and model of glove, but on each hand. Never seen that before. And I can only, the only place my mind goes is, maybe if you're having to do that, you're holding the club a little bit too hard.
Maybe they just have a medical sweat problem. They just piss sweat out. they can't grip a golf club with a bare hand. That's my exemption for them. Other than that, I don't get it.
They've learned the hard way from this sweat problem after seeing one too many drivers career off into the driving range.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna continue to keep you updated of interesting things I've seen at the driving range, because I don't know, this last few times I've been to this new driving range, I've seen a few things that I've not seen before, so I feel like it's going to be a treasure trove of treats for me, of slightly off the wall things I'm going to see. But hey ho, we'll keep you updated. Right, enough of our nonsense, let's talk about the pros. Big week, obviously on both the men's tour and the ladies tour, because this was the final week before major events on both. So obviously it's the Open coming up this week in the men's game, and it's also the Evian in the ladies game this week, starting on Wednesday. So Scottish Open Renaissance Club, genuinely one of my favorite golf courses, I would say, now in the world, because I just think it's absolutely belting and gorgeous. And we talked so many times on this podcast about how really, really great tournaments or courses have different weather conditions over the 4 day period that the competition goes on. And I think Renaissance, clearly there was a lot of, as it was called, electrical activity going on yesterday on Sunday's round. So play was halted because of lightning strikes. There was obviously some rain going on, but you had some really nice weather building up to it on Thursday and Friday. So a good test of different conditions. Min-Woo Lee takes the win after a three-way playoff with Matty Fitzpatrick and Thomas Detry. I'll come to you guys in a minute for how much you've seen and your reviews. But just before I go into that, Min-Woo Lee's putting was nothing short of sensational this weekend, because I was watching this and I was looking at the greens they were hitting onto, and I was just thinking, if you are not dialed in to your where you're landing that ball, it's literally just going to roll off the side. It was like a few of those greens were like, you know, they were like 50 pence pieces in terms of like trying to hit them and get it to stick. But even I think even when his approaches were, and I use this very, very loosely, like not quite on the money, he would just recover it with just insane putting. So I think his stats were, I think he was first or second in terms of strokes gained approaching the green, and a worthy winner because just absolutely nailed his approach and putt on the playoff hole. Chaps, how much of it did you manage to see over the weekend, and any thoughts? I'm going to come on to talk about Rory's intruder a little bit later, but before we get there, anything else you'd like to review? Ben, I'm going to come to you first. See much of it?
No, I mean, I kind of in the build-up to a week off, it was the back end of the week work-wise was pretty heavy, and then obviously was socialising pretty consistently all weekend. So I didn't see anything until kind of whack the highlights on after the England game last night when I got in. So I'd had a few to drink at that point, so I kind of... and watch the highlights in an inebriated state, but yeah, I mean, to take a playoff win in the manner that he did, I think was brilliant. It's pretty clutch, isn't it, to put it that close and knock it in against the quality of his opposition as well. I can't comment a whole lot because I didn't watch next to any of it, which I was kind of not annoyed about because you can't dictate the things, but it was a big tournament in terms of that I would have wanted to have watched. And I would have been glued to it had the time just been there, but it wasn't this week.
All right. Chris, did you manage to see any of it?
Yeah, I watched a bit of it. I thought, how many birdies in a row was it on the final day? Was it six birdies in a row he had to catch up with the leaders or something ludicrous?
I think it opened with
it was
six.
Just, I mean, you just... To go on a run like that on the final day, talking about like a momentum shift is just huge. I think overall, it was nice to see Lucas Herbert, mainly because he was in my fantasy league team, doing well. Ben, you had some $6,000 player in your fantasy league team who just crushed it, who came in at like 14 under or something. So there was obviously quite a lot of what's the word I'm looking for? It was kind of open for players that just. If you're hitting your irons well, if you're, as you said, Jim, hitting the greens, you were doing okay. So, it was enjoyable to watch. Very enjoyable to watch. And we've now definitely lost Ben. Ben's now disappeared from the screen. That's fine. I enjoyed watching it. I think I always quite enjoy watching the events in the lead up to the Open. Mainly just get an idea, especially when I just like golf in this country. Do you know what I mean? Like, I just like watching it. I like seeing it. I like seeing players struggle with the elements. We've talked about that before. I think it was, again, just a few little clues of what might happen in this week at the Open, I think.
Yeah. So on that front, so I think I'm right in saying, I could be wrong, but I think I'm right in something like, six out of the last seven or seven out of the last eight Open winners had played the Scottish Open the week before. I think the only exception to that was Shane Lowry because he played the Irish Open instead. But that was the year it was being hosted in Portrush. So I think that was fairly, fairly acceptable.
Shall I give you another stat for it?
Hit me with a stat. As long as it's actually a stat this week and not just...
This one is much better than my stat last week. Much better. So four out of the last seven winners of the Open have had a win in one of their previous two events in the lead up to the Open.
That's that's annoying because when we've come on to predict who's going to win,
it, which that feels
a moment, that stat's going to throw me off because I've deliberately not selected someone because I've said no, that it's difficult to win back to back things, which is annoying me now.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, it turns out a win in your previous two events, good fortune for the Open.
I mean, I would go back and change it, but I've got everything written down now, and you'd also know that I cheated and changed.
Yeah, we can't change it.
Because it'd be a very obvious answer. I'm moving on to
it is that.
Also, in and around the Renaissance Club this weekend, I don't know if you guys have seen it. Some excellent content production from the European Tour, because we had the hole in one challenge with Tyrrell and Poults. Brilliant bit of content between those two, because two just generally angry people when they can't get something done. It was hilarious. And also, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's probably worth watching it, especially if, you know, let's say you're battling with a few demons, because just to let you know, Ian Poulter can still hit a shank. So if you needed any kind of reassurance that golf remains hard, even for the pros, go and check it out. But yeah, just brilliant to watch. I won't spoil how they get on, because I think I would implore you all to go and give it a watch for sure.
As soon as I said no a second ago, something did come to mind. I don't know whether you two have just spoken about it, because apparently Wi-Fi out in the country sucks. But did you spot Xander Schauffele changing his putter during the week?
I did not.
So I think you played the first round with the arm lock. And it goes back to something we've spoken about before. Like, there's clearly not that much of a benefit going to an arm lock putter, because Schauffele spoke about it a couple of weeks ago. Oh, I'm going to use it until it's banned because I see a noticeable difference. Clearly not that much, because he changed back to his old putter on Friday, I believe, and putted it all weekend. So I kind of feel like, you know, where everyone's talking about trying to ban the lock putter in all forms, it kind of goes back to what we've said before. Look, if it was that beneficial, I think every player on tour would use it. But this is kind of a conversation that probably just needs to go away and die, I think. But yeah.
Now on the Open, we will come back to the Open, because we're going to talk through some genuine tips from us this week. I mean, disclaimer, as always, we are not experts. We don't know what we're doing, so don't necessarily put any stock in what we're predicting, but we will come back and get onto it. But before we do, other things going on the pro circuit. So as mentioned, there was a big week for the LPGA, because the Evian coming up this week. Probably not the ideal warm-up fit for most people, because the entire final day was washed out due to non-stop rain in Ohio. Plus, the weather forecast was also terrible today. We're recording this on a Monday. And on the basis that the major starts on Wednesday, they just canned and just used all the scores up until Saturday. So Nasser Hatalka, I'm sorry if I've not got that right, takes the win as the leading player after Saturday. Now, Daniel Kang did come out and have a bit of an opinion about this, perhaps unsurprisingly, because I think she started her day with sort of back-to-back birdies or was beginning to really pull back the lead. Now, she's come out and said that she wants to, and I'm going to try and get the quote right, she's come out and said that she wants the LPGA to acquire more resources to handle handle the weather better. But she didn't actually go on to elaborate what resources they might employ to handle the weather better. So I don't really know.
The weather?
Yeah.
Is it like what we have no control over at all?
Yeah. I was a bit lost by this comment, to be honest. I don't really know what resources you can get on a tour to offset weather conditions.
Just a shitload of giant fucking umbrellas that they all just walk around with and hold over the course. Like, what is she wanting?
The Urban Golf Classic. Just play it in the simulator. Done. Job done. I just thought that was just a really weird comment. I mean, we've talked a few times about how, look, neither the LPGA or the PGA are perfect, but I think having a pop at them from what sounds like was unplayable conditions with bad weather forecast for the next day and a major starting 2 days after that, it feels like there wasn't a huge amount to be done.
Particularly, it's like you could complain about scheduling, because you know, Ohio, north of part of the state. But it's mid-July. You typically expect good weather at this time of year, so it's not even you can complain at that. So I'm not really too sure of her angle. Kind of sounds like she was just clutching at straws and trying to give herself an excuse for not playing so well first. Got mid-day, maybe?
Yeah, I think she started the final day 8 shots back. Now I'd say she had started to pull it back, but I mean, we were still talking, you know, potentially 6 to 8 shot gap to make up on the final day. So, yeah, a little bit of an odd one. We'll see if anything more materializes over the coming days, but a bit of a peculiar one for me. And elsewhere on the PGA Tour, Lucas Glover takes the John Deere Classic. I think it's fair to say a lot of the traditional PGA players had started gravitating over towards Europe ahead of the Open this weekend. So let's get into it. Let's go for it. Let's go for the Open. So what we're going to do is I've set the boys a challenge. What we're going to do is we're going to come up with 3 tips each for you. We're going to come out with one just outright tip to win. We're going to give you a tip for someone who's currently outside the top 20 rankings to finish in the top 5 and someone outside the top 50 rankings to finish in the top 10. Who would like to go first? I think, Chris, I think you should go first on this one. Who are you going for?
Okay, let's do this. So let's do who's going to win first. There's 2 players, but I just can't look past John Rahm. He's just playing some sensational golf. I know he missed out on, what was he, finished 7th in Scotland. For someone mentally strong to turn up and play next week who can clearly control a golf ball, I just can't look past John Rahm. Yeah, nothing else needs more to be said except for that one. Someone outside the world top 20 to finish in the top 5. This person almost could have been my outside the top 50 pick. He's ranked 49th. He won in Ireland 2 weeks ago, 4th in Scotland this week. And that's Lucas Herbert. And he is, for anyone playing DraftKings this week, super cheap on DraftKings, unbelievably so. To get a win and a 4th in Scotland, and Tim, Ben, you missed this stat. 4 out of the last 7 winners at the Open have had a win in one of their 2 previous events in the lead up to the Open. And something like, I'm sure it was like 6 out of the 7 have had 3 top 10 finishes in the last 6 events or something. So clearly that man is playing some good golf. I can't look past him either. I think he's got a good chance of being top 10 at least, top 5. Well, 1st and a 4th, he's playing some good golf. Someone outside the top 50 to finish in the top 10 is Brandon Grace, ranked at 62nd in the world. Again, just been playing really well at the majors. I don't know how he got on last week, but just, he didn't play well. I didn't have a great week last week, did he? But he played okay. And he also owns the lowest championship single round in history at the Open of 62 at Birkdale. So that feels like a good stat to focus on for him as well. So I think he has a chance of a top 10 finish too.
Even though the Open is not being held at Birkdale.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Hearing Brandon's Grace's name and hearing you say 62nd in the world, obviously, I saw it earlier on as well. Kind of a bit of a head scratch. You wonder how that's happened because they're the big ones. He always seems to be there or thereabouts. He's on the TVs. You see him playing some good golf. We may just have a case of Brooks like this, that he just turns up for the big ones and doesn't care about the little tournaments.
Right. Fair enough. I mean, to be honest, they're all very, very logical, sensible picks. I can't really disagree with any of those. Ben.
So I probably made a little bit of an error, but I've written the names down and I was going to stick with it because I figured, look, it's the Open, as much as it is down in England, so potentially slightly better weather conditions than perhaps Ireland or Scotland. I figured, right, let's keep it home-based players that are used to playing in crap conditions because, as we've seen before, the Americans don't always fare so well. Now, I stuck with my pre season pick. But because he falls outside the top 20, I was like, huh, I'm going to use that loophole and I'm going to put him to finish top five. So initially I picked Tommy Fleetwood to win. But because of his world ranking, he is my top five pick of the week. So I'm hoping he does go on to take it because played all right this weekend, you know, shot 10 under. So he has a little bit of form. To win it outright, I went with Tyrrell Hatton. Again, just feel like a home lad, English course. Chances are he's going to have played it, you know, multiple times, given the fact that he is a Southern lad. And then my top 10 finish from outside the world's top 50 is Robert McIntyre. Someone who's used to playing, well, bound to be used to be playing in crap conditions, given that he's from Scotland. Finished on 11 under this weekend. You know, he's currently ranked 53 in the world, which, again, similar to Grace, I kind of struggle to believe, given the past year he's had, but he's there. And the reason why I said it's kind of a little bit of a mistake is because I then checked the weather forecast for the week ahead, and it turns out it's due to be a little bit windy, but that's coastal linked conditions. But it's due to be sunshine in Sandwich all week, so that may bring a few Americans into contention. We'll see. What we saw at the 2019 Open, no one was in with a shot because Shane Lowry was just a master of playing in a storm the whole week. Could be a completely different story this week now if it stays dry.
And it's a short course as well, right? It's not a very long course.
I don't know the yardage exactly, but I don't believe it's renowned for being overly long, no.
I'm fairly sure that I read it's one of the shortest Open courses on circulation. So if it's not windy, and I know the rough is going to be like waist high fescue or whatever, but if you can keep it in play, I feel like if it's not windy and the weather doesn't hold up, I think you're right, Ben. I think some of the Americans who, you know, even potentially like Morikawa, who can hit a decent golf ball, keep the ball in play, then has a chance. The players who aren't necessarily experienced playing links, potentially.
Not a bad shout. Right, my picks. Now, as I mentioned, I foolishly ruled out someone on the basis of the fact that it's very, very difficult to win back-to-back majors. So on the chances of history not... I was about to say not repeating myself, but that wouldn't be the case at all. In terms of history sticking, I've actually not opted for Jon Rahm as my my tip for the winner, which I'm also pretty sure is going to come back and bite me. I've actually gone for a left field choice for my pick for the winner, because, and I don't think too many people will be picking him, judging by the odds. I'm going very left field. I'm going to tip someone like Harris English to take the Open. Now, the reason for this is, and I've done some reading, I've been doing some reading this week, okay. He's gone about his business very, very quietly this year. He's won twice so far this year, and I think he finished third at the US Open. So he's just someone that is flying very much under the radar. He's crept up to 12th in the world all of a sudden in the rankings. So he's just very, very quietly flying under the radar. No one's really talking about him. But playing very, very, very well. So look, it's a left field pick. It might be completely nonsensical, but the odds I'm looking at here are that apparently he's priced at 70-1, which for the 12th ranked player in the world.
I really like it for an each way for a place in. He's played some excellent golf. And again, because he's not necessarily a big character, but the type of guy who bombs it miles or does anything spectacular, like you said, he's crept up to 12 and you wouldn't really know about it.
No.
I think it's a good pick, personally.
Someone outside the top 20 in the world to finish in the top five. I mean, admittedly, he's literally only just outside the top 20. He's 21st in the world, but always turns up at the majors, and that's Paul Casey. I think Paul Casey to finish the top five is always, I mean, within reason, a fairly decent punt, to be quite honest. He always seems to be in or around the mix when it comes to the majors. So a bit of a cop out, because, as I say, ranked 21 in the world, but look, it's my game, so I make the rules and I can decide. So I've gone for the 21st best player. Now, I've tried to offset that a little bit with someone outside the top 50 to finish in the top 10, because I've gone for the 98th ranked player in the world for my tip to finish in the top 10. But in terms of what this guy has done this year and the form that he's in, because I think he was in, again, he was in the top 20 in the Scottish Open at the weekend. Richard Bland, just the man just is on a bit of a run at the moment. And I think playing in English conditions at a course, I'm assuming he's played a fair amount of times. I think if you're going to put money on someone to finish the top 10 and you wanted some value behind it, he's probably not a bad bet.
I've already checked him as well. He is the same price as Lucas Herbert.
Is he? Interesting.
They're both 6,800, something like that, or around that. They're around that on DraftKings, something around that.
Yeah, and Lucas Herbert is ranked 49th in the world.
There are some good value picks this week for sure.
Absolutely. Okay, so well, there you go. There are our tips for the weekend. As mentioned, we have no idea what we're doing at all. We have no ears to the ground. So don't blame us if you take any of our advice and don't come off, because let's be honest, it probably won't. But anyway, it's a bit of fun. Now, moving on. Now, obviously, we are recording this on the Monday, the 12th of July. It's the day after the Euro 2020 final, and it's still pretty raw. So what we've been talking about today is that they've got to be better ways to settle football matches than penalty shootouts. But, you know, this is still a golf podcast, so we thought we need to still bring it close to home. So what we've done is we've talked about alternate playoff formats, something a bit different to, you know, you just go out and you play hole after hole. Generally speaking, I feel like if you play in most competitions, you just go out and play the 18th. That's usually a default playoff hole. But there's a lot of variables that can go into that. If the 18th benefits a long driver, then that's kind of offsetting things a little bit. Is it always the best test of all-round golfing ability? So a few questions. And also, we just wanted to have a bit of a laugh with it. So playoff formats for the people out there. Ben, I know that you've got something. Well, I think you've got two ideas, actually, potentially.
No, I mean, I've got one, but then it tails off into two, which is kind of, I suppose, particularly relevant given football last night. For me, the thought of doing a one-hole playoff is essentially like going to a football tournament and having immediate sudden-death penalties, which doesn't really seem fair. As much as we all hate penalties because we're English and we're always pretty shite at them, I think having the potential to have five penalties without immediate getting booted out for missing one, I think is pretty big. It's golf, it's immediate sudden death. So for my idea is you play holes 15 to 18, all right? It then allows you to have one or two average to bad shots in there. You may be the better golfer on the hole. This is going to allow you the opportunity to prove you are the better golfer. Every player, regardless of the level, we'll always have one bad shot. We'll always have one bad hole in them. As you said, the 18th hole may suit one player more than the other. The argument is kind of mute and it's done and dusted if you play it over four holes. I just think it's a better test of the overall player, because within those final four holes, you look at most top golf courses that the pros will play on in the world, they're all going to be significantly different. They're not all going to be straight away long par fours, say. And then if it's still tied, just like in penalty format, it then goes to sudden death. So which, this is where I add in a little bit of flexibility, the players pick which holes they go and play. So player A, whoever's the nominated player A, will get the first choice. So they might go off and say, right, 12 suits me really well. I birdied here every day this week. We're going to play the 12th. Then if that's tied after that hole, player B then gets to choose until we have the tournament finished. That's my suggestion.
I really like it. I really, really like it, because I totally agree with you. You need to have, you know, you've played 4 days of golf, and the result should be about the best overall golfer. So I think you do need a bit of variety in how you play. So I like it. I like it a lot.
Lovely.
I mean, I was gonna come to Chris next, but I'm actually just gonna jump in, because I've got one serious idea and two not serious ideas. But my serious idea is quite similar to Ben's, so I'm gonna build on it a little bit. I've also named all my playoff formats just because, you know, I had a bit of extra time to prepare for this today. So I've called this one the 3-4-5 shootout. And basically the deal here is you must play a par three, a par four, and a par five.
Nice.
In the combination of three holes. Now, not necessarily in that order. It could be any order you want, but you have to play three different par holes. Because the idea being that it takes away the idea that it could favor someone that's a long driver versus someone that's just about accuracy. If you play those three different par holes, that theoretically in a playoff situation should still weed out who is the better of those two golfers because it's the best overall variety. So it's pretty similar to Ben's. I said it's a testament to Fowler's that his ideas were all very, very sensible. And the only sensible idea that I had was on the same sort of line as his. So I thought I'd just jump in there with my idea. I'll come back to my silly ones in a moment. But Chris, leading on from that, what are your thoughts? Any ideas?
Yeah, so I like how you two have both gone quite sensible. I did have a sensible one, and then obviously you two have now covered that. Ben, I basically just had my sensible one was the more down the southern route playoff of the player picks the player picks the hole, and then they go, yeah, I want to play this one. Or they play it. If they tie, next player gets to choose, whatever. My less serious, but think could be really fun game. We're going to play a game called, I've also named it Tim, don't you worry. We're going to play a game called Bogeys. Not the game where you just shout bogeys as loud as you can without being, see who's the first one to get told off in a room. Not that. The game of bogeys is very similar to a game of horse. You know, when you play basketball, you're like, right, pick a spot, take a shot from here. Whoever gets it, if the other person doesn't, they get the H. Move location, whoever gets it, gets the O. So player one steps up and you pick a hole. So let's say the event, probably chosen the 18th because that's where all the fans are, but let's say you pick a hole and player one can choose anywhere on that hole, anywhere, to take the shot from. So they just drop the ball down. They say, right, here's where we're playing shot one from. Whoever gets nearest to the hole with that shot gets the first letter. So they would get B, whoever gets nearest. Now, couple of things to play with. So if you know you're a long driver, you go, right, you know what? I'm just going to go back to the tee. We can tee it up and you can play from there. However, to add to the complexity, because we like to make things super complex in this game, if you just hit a smashing long drive, but it goes into the thick rough, you get penalized for that. So you do get rewarded for accuracy as well. So if you, let's say you're from the tee and you land it on the fairway, the distance you get is the distance you get. If you land it in the semi-rough, it's minus 10 yards. If you land it in the thick stuff, it's minus 20 yards. So you can't just it's not necessarily just hammer it and just put it as far up there, but put it into the thick rough. It's got to be placed as well. And then player two then go, whoever wins that, player two then goes, okay, great, now we're going to go play it from over here. And it can be anywhere. It could be in the rough. It could be literally anywhere on the hole that you like. And it's just done, whoever gets that one shot closest to the hole.
I like it.
Mm.
I'm not sure it gets signed off.
And obviously, the winner who is whoever gets the bogeys first. That's the winner. Whoever gets the word bogeys first.
Yeah, that's a winner for me.
I think it's good. I don't know how quick the PGA are going to be to sign it off, but I like the idea behind it. I like the idea of someone being that. They back themselves that much, they might just drop one in the second cut and say, right, try and hit the green from here because I bet I can.
Yeah,
exactly. Or you drop it into a bunker, like a fairway bunker, yeah. Or even like a greenside bunker. You just back yourself as a bunker player. I can get this closer than you can.
Yeah, that's nice. Oh, that's a really good one, actually, when you drop it. Yeah, you drop it in like a proper, like, deep, like, bucket greenside bunker and you get out. I mean, that's literally my worst nightmare if someone was going
to
do that.
I would love to play you on that too.
I'm tapping out at that time. I'm tapping out if that's what it takes. That's good. Okay. So as I mentioned, I've got two non-sensible ones. So I'll run these past you. I've named them both. First one's called the putting shootout. This is me bringing the penalty shootout to golf. So nice. This is obviously, they say drive for show, putt for dough. What we're talking about here is five putts from different locations on a green. You obviously have one putt to get it in. You have best of five. Winner after five putts takes the win. After that, we obviously go to sudden death. So a very simple way of, I suppose, transplanting the penalty shootout over to the putting green. And the other one I came up with was, and this is probably a bit silly. It's called the nomination game. So what happens here is both players have to go to a par three. Now, each player is going to take it in turns to nominate the club that the other player has gets to use in order to try and hit the green. Okay? Now, you take it in turns. Obviously, it's literally first person to hit the green wins. So let's say it's a 200-yard. Let's say it's a 200-yard par three. You're probably going to say to your opponent, right, you can hit a 58-degree wedge because unless you're Bryson and you've had a shedload of protein that day, you're probably not going to get it 200 yards. But basically, yeah, so you take it in turns and you remove a club each time until someone hits the green. Because theoretically, the more clubs you remove, the more you're actually going to get towards the club, but someone can actually hit that distance and leave it on the green. So that's the nomination game. It's very similar to the it's the 14 club challenge on the European Tour socials. But I think it'd be quite a, I mean, that's a player format I would quite like to watch someone in our group have a crack at. Mainly because trying to see one of our lot hit a 200-yard par three with a sandwich would just be very funny. When you see people deliberately trying to hit a deliberate knife with a sandwich would just be scenes.
Tim, we can't hit a green 175 yards away with the club that we want to hit it with. I just don't back us with any other club.
Yeah, that could be quite a long round, particularly if we don't hit the green with the ideal club. You then get a whole bag full again, reload, start all over again. Could be there a while, actually.
Yeah, I think for our group, it'd probably be the case of, right, the playoff is hit the green.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, in the pros game, that could be quite interesting, the nomination game. Well, there you go. Some interesting ideas for playoffs that you and your groups, your societies might want to have a crack at in case you're bored of the old just go down the 18th and play it again, or go down the first and play it again. In the pro setup, Fowlis, I think you're onto something. I think it should be a combination of three holes, and it should be a variety of holes. Because yeah, if you just go out and play, I don't know, the 10th, which is a 440-yard par four, and you're Bryson, then that's very different to if you're playing, I don't know, Phil nowadays. Fairway anyway.
What you've essentially done is created the extra time of golf, right? That's what the three extra holes do. That's your extra time. So that gives you, I think that gives a fair reflection on, as you said, it's not just a long booming par five that one player might have been, you know, birdied every day that week and the other player's like, well, can't hit that or whatever. So I think that's a much fairer way to do it.
What I had in my head when I kind of wrote it down was, as I alluded to last week, I've been watching a lot of videos on Sawgrass recently, and particularly the championship course. You look at 16, 17, 18, you've got 16's par 5, bit of water down the right, there's trouble, there's lots of bunkers there. You've then got the 17th, which is the iconic par 3, Island Green, and then you've got a lot of trouble down 18. All require different shots at different moments. You've got long irons into greens, lots of water, lots of trouble. That would be a great test of, right, who's got the nerve in a playoff to take it that extra bit. And I think that, again, just was like, well, that for me is quite an easy kind of suggestion to make.
So just whilst we're on this subject, and this is actually, so I knew about all of this before I set this challenge. Did you guys know that the four majors each have a different playoff structure?
No.
Ah, interesting. So let me talk you through this. So at the Open, any golfers that are tied for the lead at the end of regulation play will play a four-hole stroke play playoff.
Nice.
So that's not a shootout at all. Whoever has the lowest aggregate score on those four holes determine the winner. If you're still tied after those four holes, then you go to sudden death. But you do play the combination of four holes in the playoff as standard. US Open, very, very different. If there is a tie at the end of the 4 days, all players that are tied at the top of the leaderboard have to come back the next day and play a full 18-hole playoff.
That that?
What?
Apparently, this is what I mean. This does not look like an authoritative golf website. I'm now questioning my sources live.
This feels like another website of people like us who have come up with better alternatives. So.
It's sponsored by Strixon and Cleveland Golf, so it sounds actually more authoritative than I was making out. It's just they probably need to update their design of their webpage a bit better. Masters apparently is just a sudden death playoff. You just go hole by hole, sudden death. And apparently the PGA, you have a 3-hole playoff. So it's not actually apparently, and again, feel free to call me out because there's every chance that this website is not legit, but apparently they do all use slightly different variations of playoff. Not as good as ours and not as good as the nomination game, but
yeah. Can I just give you the update on the US Open one, Tim?
Yeah, just as well, just because it's come to mind. Last year, Bryson and Matty Wolf went to playoff. Am I right in thinking? No, I am talking nonsense. Don't worry.
Tim, you're not wrong. It used to be two rounds of 18. It used to be a 36-hole playoff.
Jesus. So by the end of it, you've played six rounds of golf.
That got canned. It then became 18 holes. And that only ended. By the looks of it, by 2018.
Yeah.
By the looks of it. Where they now go to a 2-hole aggregate playoff.
That makes more sense.
Now it's a 2 holes. They play it over 2 holes.
18 holes is quite punchy. To be totally,
it is punchy, isn't it? Come back tomorrow, play another round.
Just had four brutal days on golf courses which are set up to beat you up.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it all again.
So there you have it. Some ideas and a bit of pokey live research from the boys there. Again, Chris sounds like he's looking at a lot more of an authoritative source than me. So I could just talk.
You're not wrong. It's probably more up to date.
Oh, well, there we go. I'm just out of date. Well, I'd rather be out of date than just cold, hard, wrong. So there's always that, I suppose. Right. Now, I did talk about it a little bit earlier, and I said I was going to come back to it. Now, chaps, at the Scottish Open this weekend, a peculiar incident with Rory McIlroy. Not him at all. Not everyone listening may have seen this, but it's worth YouTubing just to see it because it was pretty weird. So day one, Rory was playing with John Rahm, I believe. Those two just hanging out just by the side of the first tee, getting ready to go. Out of nowhere, a spectator just walks up to Rory's bag, takes the driver head cover off his driver, then takes the driver off, just walks off. Now, I'm not going to go too big into this particular event because for a myriad of reasons, like we don't know the necessary kind of health state of the gentleman that did this, but it did get me to thinking that, you know, in terms of fan etiquette, I wanted to give this a slightly humorous edge, if you like, or certainly just a bit of an alternate way of looking at this. Now, I, for one, and I'm sure there are lots of people out there who would back me up on this, I am not a member of the mashed potato brigade. It really rubs me up the wrong way. I just think it's just attention seeking idiocy, basically. So I've asked the boys to come up with a few rules that, let's say, we were going to host our own golf event. So we're the judge and jury of our own event. What code of conduct, what rules and potential punishments are we setting out for the spectators at our events? I have no idea where this is going to go. So let's just roll with it and see where this little journey takes us. Chris, you're nodding at me. So it looks like you've got some ideas stored up. So come on, let's go for it. We're our own personal golf event. What rules and punishments are you handing out to spectators?
Yeah, I'm excited for this. I've again, I'm going to premise this with, that we're not, this is not every event on the golf tour that I'd have this at. This is our, this is a one-off event. This is our event and we can do as we like. Yeah. I am going down the route of the Phoenix Open, the waste management, and having, I want to encourage, whether it's a stadium course or whatever, I want to encourage that stadium atmosphere. So I'm 100% on your side, Tim. Mashed potatoes, absolutely not allowed. We are much more creative than that. I was going to say, just use the Ryder Cups as an example, right? The European fans always have at least one or two or three excellent jazzy, chanty songs, right? There's always those songs, as opposed to mashed potatoes. Well done, you dick. We've always got some kind of, it's a bit football-y, sure, but we've always got some kind of chant. And I absolutely freaking love it. So at our events, it would be encouraged that we get chants, because so it's still going to be an individuals event, right? So you've got to have chants for each players as they come up onto the tee box on the party hole, that people are singing as they come up, as they hit. I want chanting and singing while players hit shots. I saw a quote from, I think it was Michael Jordan the other day, and he was just saying, if I have to take a free throw in basketball with tens of thousands of people screaming at me, you can take a putt with me talking in the background. And I don't disagree. I think we, like, players should have that experience. Like, you imagine, you know, the atmosphere yesterday at Wembley playing football, taking a penalty kick, where it's like, just knowing that tens of thousands of fans in the stadium want you to miss. Millions of people around the world want you to miss. Imagine that in a stadium, like out in golf. I think that changed. So I want to play that kind of, I want that kind of environment. Yeah, so I want to encourage that.
Just got a slight question here, which may change my opinion on this. Are they given a hymn sheet before they go in? How do they know the chants? Because we're chanting for players here, individual players.
I'm not expecting there to be 150 different in your quote hymns that are sung for each player, but I would like to think that there would be a how would we put this?
A choir master.
Yeah, there'd be a band, sure, a drum probably going. And there would be someone who has come up with the songs, four or five good songs that are sent out before the event, so you know what you're singing. And yeah, sure, if you want to call it a hymn sheet, then you can get that. I'd probably have it on the big screen being like shown rather than a hymn sheet. But yeah, sure, that would definitely help for sure. So that's one. That's one of my rules. That's just encouraging that. In fact, I think they all come back down to encouraging party atmosphere. I don't actually know this for a fact, but you don't have to wear full golf gear to attend the event. I always just see people in like they look like they're about to walk on and play a round of 18, and I'm just like,
That was one of mine that I scrubbed off, was no full kit wankers. I can't deal with that. There are people turning up in the full Ricky outfits. I'm like, no. There's only one person who can wear full Ricky outfits, and he's the guy playing in the tournament, so don't.
Like, I appreciate you turn up to a football match wearing, like, you might wear your team shirt with a player's name on the back, right? But you wouldn't turn up with, like, shin pads, football boots, and your socks pulled up. Like, that just wouldn't happen, right? So why do people in golf feel like, I don't know. So, yeah, so for me, don't need to be a full kit wanker. You can wear whatever you want to watch, to spectate. That's fine.
Not whatever
We're not going Happy Gilmore style where you can wear what am I thinking? What's the thing that was the
Borat Mankini?
No Mankinis. It's not that kind of party. It's not that kind of vibe. The only other one I had was similar to my chanty one, but yeah, music always being played, and that would be, but I guess that's not fan rule, that's just kind of a vibe. Yeah, basically, mashed potatoes, you're out immediately, chanting and shouting while there and not being a full kit wanker.
Yeah, so I had full kit wanker in mind, I have to admit. But then I did scrub it because I didn't know how well it would be received. Because I'm not a fan of adults wearing sports shirts anyway. Adults wearing football shirts, football games, I'm sorry, that's not a bit of me. So wearing full golf gear to watch golfers play, I'm like, smart I get, but matching gear to your favourite player, sorry. No.
Come on then, Ben. Let's hit us up. Let's go.
I went slightly different route. I didn't really go rules for my own tournament. I went punishments for spectators at our event. That was what I leaned heavily on.
Yeah, that's fine.
I limited myself to just five because I started getting carried away. And a lot of them, well, three of them revolve around things that can be shouted out. And if you shout out a certain thing, there will be a certain punishment.
Okay. I'll
come on to those in just a sec, because the first one's a little bit different and it's something that you are allowed to do as a fan, not something you're going to get punished for. So if a player nukes a golf ball off the tee and it comes near you and it almost hits you, it is at your discretion to stamp on that ball and put it into the ground as far as you like, if they don't shout for. Or you can pick it up and launch it wherever you see fit, because not shouting for, when you've howitzed a ball towards the fans, you're an arsehole. So you deserve the punishment. So
agreed.
Fans, you can do what you want with it. Right, here's where the spectator punishment. So mashed potatoes, it's public lashings, I'm afraid. You will be put in a stock in front of everyone and you will get the punishment you thoroughly deserve. That was the first one for shouting. This one I never understand is anyone shouting get in the hole when the players are hitting off the tee. Literally the objective of the game. Don't really know why you need to shout it.
Can we help with that? Thank you.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah. If you are caught doing that, you'll be sentenced to a 1 hour timeout. And we have timeout boxes dotted around the course. I don't know if you remember The Longest Yard. Do you remember that movie?
Yes.
They had the hot box that is like right out in the heat. So these timeout boxes, they're 1 meter squared, they're soundproof, and they're pitch black. So you don't know what's going on. You're put in there for an hour until you can calm yourself down and stop being such an idiot.
I like it.
That's number two. This one, if you yell anything like get in the bunker or get in the water, something like that, anything where you're just being a dick, if you're going to behave like a child, we'll treat you like a child. So we're going to put you on litter picking duty, just like we used to at school, and you're doing litter picking for the whole weekend. Even when the tournament finishes, you're staying there until the course is spotless, I'm afraid.
All right, this is absolutely sensational. Okay, because one of the rules and punishments I wrote down was anyone actively shouting for a player's shot to go bad will be subject to sorting post-tournament rubbish into papers, plastics, and non-recyclables as well as being barred from the next 24 months of tournaments. So that could not be more on the wavelength.
Brilliant. I love these. You guys, I love these rules. I'm all over these punishments. These are great.
And then the final one for me, because I was like, it's kind of unforgivable, but it happens. You see players, I've seen Tiger stop on his downswing multiple times for it. If your phone rings or your camera clicks when a player is in his backswing or is getting ready to fire and it disturbs them to the point they have to stop and turn around and say something, you're getting thrown headfirst into the pond. I'm afraid that's it. That's unforgivable. In you go. Full clothed, in you go. We'll take your phone. We'll look after it. But yeah, you're in the pond. That's so they're my five.
So that at our event is the only one that I would disagree with. At our event, the only one that I would disagree with, because I'm encouraging chanting. If I'm encouraging chanting, I can't really get angry when someone clicks the camera or phone rings, can I? So that's the only one that I can disagree with. But yeah, so I love this approach. This is great. Punishment delved it. Yeah, left, right, and center.
Yeah, this is all a bit of me, because this is exactly where I went as well. I went on kind of like proper like embarrassing punishment. So I also had one for phone or camera snaps going off. So for any phone situation. So if your phone rings or your phone pings or you have an alarm goes off, don't know why that'd be the case. Or you take a photo, you have to hand your phone over to the player's caddy for their exclusive use for the next 2 hours, and you have to, and they can do whatever they please with it. They'll give it back, but you have to give them the phone. Other rules that I came up with. So anyone found to have picked up a ball that is in play, so a spectator that's gone over to the rough, whatever reason, and picked the ball up and tried to pocket it, will be subject to marching to the nearest water hazard where they must retrieve no fewer than 10 golf balls to hand to the pro shop.
Nice.
Is that something that happens often? Do people pocket, surely, like, not at the pros? Surely not.
There's enough examples of it. If you kind of have a look on Google and YouTube, you see people just walking over to a ball, like, oh, yeah, pick it up. People are like, what the fuck are you doing?
Really? Wow. Yeah. Okay.
There's also something that was on, is it Zaya Golf that's does the rounds quite heavily on Instagram? I don't know if you guys saw it earlier, but apparently, and this may be fake, but it really did make me chuckle, was that a fellow was at, I presume, either a major or a very, very significant event where there was enough people around, where there are a few people milling around, and this guy just took a ball out of his pocket, shouted four, chucked it into a bit of space, and the number of people that sort of swarmed around it like a flock of sheep is just embarrassing.
That's amazing. I like that. That's well played from him.
That's actually very good, because they'll all be standing there for ages,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, is it going to be Tiger?
I feel like the way to really weed out the people that are really not paying attention.
Yeah.
Let's get what they deserve. What else do I go with? So obviously I mentioned about the people actively shouting for players' shots go bad. So what I'm thinking here is that there was the JT example, wasn't there, when I think it was last year when someone literally shouted, get in the bunker, to one of the shots, and he just very, I think pretty calmly actually, just turned around and said, get that guy out of here. I think well within his rights. But as I mentioned, that was that would be subject to sorting out post-tournament rubbish, because it's just a punishment that sucks. And that's where I wanted to go with it. Anyone found shouting...
Have you two been to any professional tournaments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they hand you anything to you know, like a sheet which says, look, if you're caught doing this, you're out?
Because I didn't read anything that said if you shout mashed potatoes, you'll get lashings on the eighth or anything like that. I mean, yeah, you get like a pack. Like, yes, with your tickets, you get a pack, but. No, I don't. I mean, maybe there was things in there that said, don't do this, don't do that. But I don't remember. I think, no. But we can have that at our event. We can have a big sign that says, don't be a douche. Like, or, you know, here's what you should do and shouldn't do.
I think for our event, as part of the ticketing process, they have to, before they purchase said ticket, they must kind of tick one of those boxes to say, I have read to and agreed to all rules and
I'm sure I've done that. Yeah, I'm sure I agreed to the terms and conditions. Did I read the 7,000 pages of terms and conditions? Obviously not. But yeah, I don't. Whether they actually had I don't remember there being. It would be quite good if they did have like a top six things you must not do. Do not shout mashed potatoes. You know, like all that. I think that'd be quite good.
I think all the rules you've come up with so far are absolutely fair game. So yes, the final one that I came up with, and it does come back to the mashed potatoes squad, or anyone found shouting, it's difficult because, you know, someone will eventually argue, oh, I was shouting that, but that where I'm from, that means support. But I did go specific on mashed potatoes. Anyone found shouting mashed potatoes post-drive will be subject to cleaning duties of any porter cabins on site after the conclusion of said day's play.
Yeah, I would even just, I would extend that, and it would be at the discretion of an umpire or whatever, like a referee following the event, or just following that group. Any, like, because as soon as you say mashed potatoes, they'll just change it to fucking, I don't know, sweet potato, or they'll just change it to any ludicrous random word that gets shouted, just that needs to get punished. Yeah. Mashed potatoes is our example.
Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of the punishments we've come up with, not the lashings. The lashings probably is a bit far. I probably big wouldn't truth. Be imposing that. but the punishments that I came up with were things that I thought might, you know, for the general good of the tournaments and the event. So picking up litter, cleaning toilets, getting golf balls out of the lake. Although, again, just to reiterate something we said previously on Slice of Golf, don't buy lake balls.
Yeah.
Don't buy lake balls. But still, someone's gonna have to go in on a long enough someone's gonna go in and get those balls at some point. So you may as well, if you've been a dick, then you know what, you can go in fully clothed and get them. It's good for the course. So there we go. Yeah. So I went for less Dickensian punishments than Ben did, but I do agree with the general things that he is punishing, because I mean, look, where this ultimately comes down to is just don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
that's generally what it can be summarized up as, kind of just on the you know, whatever instructions were given, just don't be a dick and you won't get punished. You won't get lashings. Don't be a dick and you won't have to pick up litter. Like, that generally, I think, is a good rule to follow. Are you being a dick? Yep. Okay. You're going to get punished. I think that's a good kind of moral guide for sure.
Yeah. And I feel like a lot of where you get the really, really annoying stuff, and I could be wrong, but I feel like a lot of it is just people trying to get like attention, or they're like, they're 2 seconds on TV that if you shout mashed potato after Brooks hits a drive, you're going to go like, you know, you're going to speed home that night and watch the full rerun of the day. So like, oh, at this precise moment, you can hear me shout mashed potatoes. I'm like, cool. No, you're just a dick. Just don't be a dick.
I'm going to put it out here. If any of you lot messaged me like in the group chat, was like, I'm going to be that guy that shouts mashed potatoes, you might get booted from the group immediately. Yeah. Like, I might genuinely be like, and removed from WhatsApp group.
I'd probably start off with a, yeah, just don't.
Yeah.
Please just don't. And then if they did proceed to do it, yeah, there might be a defriending in WhatsApp or social chat that would be going on.
No longer my Facebook friend. Yeah, get up.
No, I am no longer willing to be associated with you after your mashed potato itch.
Public lashings, bring them back. Very underrated.
There you have it. There you have it. Final thing for the week. And again, we're all feeling a little bit sorrowful today because it's Monday after the Euros final. I looked at the stats earlier. We don't have any listeners from Italy. Congratulations if anyone is Italian listening to this. Congratulations. We're all impartial here. Well done. But obviously, we are all feeling a little bit glum. So I thought we'd end this week's episode on just a final note of humour. And I asked the boys to come back with, right, just, you know what? Real simple, real, real simple question. Funniest thing you've seen on a golf course. I'm going to lead this off this week. And because the person that this is about, we've not had an update on this week. We haven't had Pop Swatch this week. So I thought I'd do a little feature on him this week, just because this is probably one of the funniest things I've ever seen on a golf course. And disclaimer, this was quite a few years ago when he was really, really just getting back. He was just starting off. So he's improved light years since this time. So this is not like a public digging out. It kind of is, but he's not at this stage anymore. So I'm gonna set the scene. So it's a weekend away that we've organized after golf. It's actually the scene, if you've listened to it, it's the scene of my lowest ever moment on a golf course, but it was the subsequent day to this. Myself, Chris, and Pops were on the tee. Chris and I tee off. Okay, fair enough. You know, on the fairway or on second cut, not great shots. Pops strikes up, looking quite confident, because I think he had actually a fairly decent first day. So he strides up quite confident, sort of gives the shoulders a bit of a roll, limbers up, goes to tee off, stone cold, tops the ball. Goes about 15 yards, trickles forward towards the ladies' tee. We all know the rule. If you don't get past the ladies' tee, shorts come down. So this is now his second shot that we're lined up for. And again, similar kind of routine. Obviously, we've had a bit of a giggle by this point. He sort of has a bit of a giggle, then composes himself a little bit. Deep breath, takes his swing. Chunk, and all myself and Chris see is a divot fly about probably further than his first shot, probably about 30 yards onto the fairway. The divot's inside his golf ball. He hasn't even hit the golf ball. And at this point, we just erupted. I've never heard Chris laugh so much in my life. Because I've just seen this divot fly in the air. Just to see a divot go that far and then look back and the ball hasn't even been touched was just absolutely world class. But again, that was probably, I mean, there may be funny things I've seen, but I just thought I'd give that a particular shout out because we've not had any Pops action this week. But as I said at the start, disclaimer, that was at the very, very, very early days of his golfing career, and he's not in that place anymore, I'm happy to report. Who would like to go next? Chris.
Chris, sure, you can I just also say, Pops, I've had the update today. We're Monday. I think he went to the range maybe three times last week. He's got range sessions. I think he had a lesson today. Range booked in round, at least one round this booked in. He's getting in. He's sneaking in a lot of golf.
Can we just confirm he's still employed and got a job, doesn't he?
Yeah. However, right. He when I suggested we took Friday afternoon off to play, he did say I would not be able to leave work early on Friday for the second week in a row that we'll be taking the piss. So he is at least paying some attention to his work and doing some work, it seems. Working from home, very good for Pops. Working from home, very good for his golf game. My funniest moment, there's I'm going to go with the two. One also involves Pops, and this was more humorous after the event, knowing that everyone was okay and safe at the time, possibly quite scary. It might have been Stratford as well. Yeah. And it was day two, and we had buggies, and the rain came down, and then lightning came down, and we all kind of on the WhatsApp group had decided, even when it was heavy rain, we're like, oh, should we give this a break? Should we call this off for the next hour and see how happens? And the lightning came right now. We definitely got to call it off. And I just remember walking up the fairway. Was it day? I can't remember what day it was. And just seeing Ben and Sophie in the buggy just coming down the hill. Not particularly like they weren't racing down the hill or anything or whatever. Who was driving? Sophie was driving, and the buggy starts to spin as it comes down the hill. And as it spins its 180, which way was it? Sophie jumps out of the buggy. So she was driving. Ben is now going backwards in a buggy as the passenger. No way to control it. Heading towards near certain death, I think was the outcome.
I didn't see this. I only heard about it. So Sophie is just, she's just bailed. She's just flung herself out of the buggy as it's careering down this hill.
That was very much one for all, all for once. I'm not going down with this ship.
Or was it the Ben jumped out? Oh, I can't remember. One of them jumps out, leaves the other one just complete, like, I'm off. See you later. That was, again.
So the other person was left in the position of not being able to control the buggy at all. They're not driving. They're going downhill backwards.
Yeah.
And it's powering with rain and lightning. Yeah. And the buggy is out of control. All the clubs presumably careering all over the place.
Yeah. Very steep as well.
Very steep, yeah.
It was not a little one.
So that was a fairly amusing moment. And that, again, I want to say that was neither of them were being dickheads in that time. It was just driving down a hill in a buggy, and the buggy just completely lost it with the rain, etc. Again, there's a few amusing moments. One that just sticks in mind: we're in Portugal. Al Reeves he's having a bad day. He's having a bad day, and when you get to that point of you're trying to be supportive, and yet you also know what's about to happen is going to make great Instagram footage. So he tops his drive. It goes about, I don't know, 15 yards, doesn't make the women's tees, and and somehow the ball has stopped on this horrendous downslope, like just awful, awful downslope. So he walks up to it. We all know what happens. Shorts go down, and he stood over the ball, and he takes a swing, and he hits maybe 3 feet behind the ball. I genuinely thought it was a practice swing. Genuinely thought he just done a practice swing. Nope, actually main swing. He then goes again. Big old swipe, again, hits maybe 2 feet behind the ball, gets a little bit closer. At this point, I realise he's actually trying to hit the ball, and I just lose it. I absolutely lost my shit. Meanwhile, he's obviously getting angrier and angrier while taking swipes at this golf ball. He eventually makes contact, I think probably on swing 4 or 5, and just about makes it past the women's tees. I was in pieces. Yeah, I was an absolute goner. It was just one, and it's all on camera. I think it's either on the Instagram stories or it's on the Portugal video somewhere. Yeah, that was one of my funniest
My funniest in golf moments, and I wasn't even in your group that day. That was just the funniest moment. I'm watching the videos back, and then the ensuing screenshots that kept coming up and still keep coming up in our group. Hands down. Taking a divot and seeing a chunk of mud fly from about 2 feet back, way beyond his football. Yeah, that was a very good moment. From that same trip was one of mine. Again, I couldn't pick between the two. From the same trip was one of mine, which also made the final cut for the Frei Bentos video, which you've got, Chris, which you can have a look at the YouTube. One of our friends picked up a game of golf, and like no one else I've ever met, ever with golf, he took to it like duck to water, and he found the game very, very easy. So like in like his fifth ever round, he broke 90 or broke 80 or something, and all he'd known was golf to be quite easy. Played golf with like 4 or 5 clubs and that was it, because he was really good at it. He came up against me on the final day, so I was playing with him, and I was playing very, very well at the time, and it was his first real moment of struggling golf. And kind of, you have to
wait. Can we add to it? Like, also day 4 of a golf trip, you're knackered. Like you've gone hard on the booze. You're physically, emotionally drained. Like it's actually quite tough that 4th day without any pressure. It's already quite a struggle anyway. So yeah. He was just not ready for it.
He was, I think, at the time 6 or 7 down with not masses to play. So you can imagine his mindset on the course, and it's still fairly new. And I think not long before that, it was just like, I just really want to enjoy my holiday, but my golf might really suck. We stepped up. I think it must have been hole 12 or 13. It's a relatively short par 3, but there was water, a kind of a stream, which was in front and then sloped all the way around the back of the green. And he straight topped one into to short of the green, straight in the water. I was like, right, reload. Knifed one through the back. And then to the camera, because we had the boys on the camera that were filming us for a video. And they were like, right, tell us what's going on. And then he says to the camera, hole in 1 for 5. Oh, he then, what made this even better is our friend has, when he starts laughing, it's one of those laughs that makes you laugh, because it is such a loud cackle, Ollie Percival. So.
Well, also by this point, because I was in the same group that was playing. By this point, you could all kind of see the kind of day that this guy was having. So by this point, we were all lining up. You know, we were being very, very, very supportive friends by all standing right behind him, all with phones out, ready for the inevitable to happen.
this is his 5th shot, so his 2nd reload off the tee. He then decided to absolutely knife the crap out of it, and it went miles. Went straight into the water again, and he almost bent the club around the top of his head. You just see him now. The camera then pans around to me, Tim, and Ollie. Ollie's, machine gun laugh is going off. Me, Tim, and Ollie are all on the floor crying. Again, I guess it's one of those you have to be there to see it, but that was my, I think that probably takes it as number 1.
Can I just ask a question?
Yeah.
This is actually where I get a bit worried about the world of golf. Has he played a round of golf since? And that was two and a half years ago.
I've been back out on the course with him once since, which is not, I don't know how much he's settled for that, but I know I've played with him once. And then my 2nd funniest moment, I'm surprised it's not come up, and actually features one of us. We were in Turkey a couple of years ago, and I was also witness to this, and it, the most fantastic, unusual tee balls I've ever seen in my life, and I still to this day don't know how he did it. Tim Williams steps up with driver, must have opened the club face to about 45 degrees right, and absolutely caned it not far off a right angle directly.
It was literally a right angle.
And it went beyond, obviously, way off of our fairway. There's no chance of that happening. It went over the next fairway and into the pond on their side. And again, I think it's one of those, the people you're with and the reaction from that, and having watched the video over probably circa 100 times since, it's the commentary that Johnny Reeves, our good pal, has that accompanies the footage, which makes it even funnier, because he just goes, wowee!
I still to this day could not tell you how I hit that shot. And I was having a great day, but I was hitting off the tee quite nicely. And what made it worse was, like, so we're playing night golf as well, so everything's illuminated to the max. Because normally, like, let's say you shank a shot. Obviously, you get the horrible feeling, but generally speaking, like, you don't really see that ball for very much, because it's probably just gone fast straight off into the undergrowth or into the trees. Not only did I absolutely open the club face and Geronimo this shot at a 90 degree right angle, I then had to have the sincere displeasure of watching this ball just sail at said right angle over a fairway with people on it, and then into the pond with absolutely no knowledge of how I'd done it, and then obviously having to go back for a reload immediately, having just done it.
And then having to relive it again and again and again and again and again in our group chat. Even now, 2 years down the line, that video resurfaces every now and again, and that still comes up with other friendship groups of mine that play golf, and they ask about that video. It's quite a famous video, that one, Tim. That's been viewed a lot of times. So yeah, those are my top two.
Yeah, I think I go at max 2 months without that being sent to me by someone just with a laughing face on it.
Yeah. I don't go 2 months without just flicking back through the Instagram stories just to watch it, to be honest with you, because it just makes me so happy to watch. It's just so good. And if you haven't seen it and you're listening, definitely go onto it's on the Frei Ventos Instagram, isn't it? I can't remember which course. You might have to do some viewing to get through to it, but yeah, pick the one that's night golf.
Yeah,
I'm sure I've shared it in Sunday Red Group before as well. It's just one of those moments that, you know, it's the lesson is from this: film lots on the golf course so that you can capture the shit moments and all have a good laugh about it later on, because that's what this is, right?
There we go. Just to round things off, just for a tough 48 hours or 24 hours for us sports lovers in England. You know, just a little bit of silliness and a little bit of humour to brighten the day up. But look, hey, that's gone now. It's open week, so that's what we're getting excited about this week. We'll be on next week with a review of all that's coming up. That's all that goes on. Review of the weird and the wonderful things that we see on the Open. But for now, fellas, anything more to add before we sign off this week?
That's it for me.
All good. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and we'll see you on the next one. Cheers.
Catch you later.
Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. If you've enjoyed listening to us ramble on about all things golf, then please do us a huge favor and hit subscribe. Also, please leave us a review. It helps us out massively. It means that we get to do more, get more guests on the show, and so on. The podcast is brought to you by Sunday Red, the world's greatest online golf club. We host events, training, content, and loads more. If you want to join a growing community of golfers that enjoy a round and don't take themselves too seriously, head on over to sundayredgolf.co.uk. It's completely free. And we're also brought to you by Tour Champ. Do you want to see who out of your buddies is the best golfer overall over the course of a year? That's exactly what Tour Champ offers, is you can build your very own Race to Dubai style tournament online. Go check it out at tourchamp.co.